You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Earlier this month, the World Health Organization announced a new approach to malaria control. Interventions which include indoor spraying of the pesticide DDT in epidemic areas and also in areas with high and constant malaria transmission. The World Health Organization had phased out indoor spraying of DDT in recent decades due to health and environmental concerns. Peter Orris belongs to a coalition of health and toxic experts from around the world that has expressed concern at the World Health Organization's decision to give DDT a clean bill of health. He's a physician and public health professor and is the director of the Occupational Health Services Institute at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Now, can you give me an idea of how widespread malaria is?
Malaria is a disease of both tropical climates and poverty. And it is primarily concentrated in sub-Saharan Africa, areas of Asia, and Latin America.
Now, it kills quite a large number of people each year, I understand.
Yes, I understand the figures are still over a million people a year, and many children.
As I mentioned, the World Health Organization's promoting the indoor spraying of DDT. Is this a significant change in international health policy?
Actually, I don't think that's entirely accurate. There was a press release about a week and a half or so ago in Washington from the World Health Organization, from the head of the Rollback Malaria Coalition, the staff member for WHO. And the title on the press release was just as you said, DDT given clean bill of health for indoor spraying. I think that was an unfortunate choice of words and an unfortunate press release because it has given a mistaken impression that there in fact has been a change in WHO's rather balanced and evidence-based policy with respect to the use of DDT where necessary as a transition away from the use of this pesticide and others as being, number one, not the most effective way of fighting malaria, and number two, a long-range poison in the planet as a whole.
Now, however, the WHO did stop promoting its use earlier on, or a couple of decades ago. Is that not the case?
No, that's not accurate. The WHO, in conjunction with the, I think it was 120, maybe 150 countries that negotiated the Stockholm Convention about persistent organic pollutants, WHO proposed to that treaty as it was being developed that there be a balanced approach to DDT, that it not be abolished, that it not be banned immediately, that it was still necessary in the struggle against malaria. They proposed an approach that said residual indoor spraying of DDT in particular areas that was necessary to use it would be approved. The procedure would be for countries that still wanted to use it to make application to WHO and indicate why this was necessary to use. A very balanced, appropriate approach because most of the struggle against against malaria is very locally based, and one has to be very sensitive to the local conditions to be able to make headway.
So then how does DDT spraying save lives in the countries with serious malaria problems like Africa?
Well, in a situation in which, for instance, Southern Africa that had not used DDT in a number of years had a resurgence and an outbreak in malaria in a couple of areas, and they used it in this way as residual indoor spraying. And what that does is it, number one, kills the mosquitoes that are on the walls or that would attach to the walls, but additionally repels them for a far longer time. And this keeps them away from the individuals in the evening at dusk when they are in the houses. The actual approach to eradication of malaria, though, is really dependent upon government policy, community organization, adequate treatment of those with malaria, because that's where the mosquitoes get the infection to begin with that they're spreading. Removal of standing water, larvicides in standing water to kill the mosquitoes before they become, or give them nowhere to breed before they become airborne, and finally some degree of airborne pesticide use for the mosquitoes that have gotten through. In every one of the settings with that kind of an integrated approach was used, such as the United States, malaria has been eradicated. Now, this is true as well in Mexico, for instance, that hasn't used DDT in a number of years, in Brazil, in Vietnam, and a variety of places around the world.
So I'm hearing that despite what you're saying there, DDT does have some very positive effects. It's a very, very short, it's a good short-term solution. What evidence is there into the human health effects of DDT?
Well, it is a very interesting public health balancing act, if you will, because a lot of the toxicity of DDT is not seen immediately, as you do see the effects of malaria immediately. And DDT will have effects on reproduction, will have effects on shortening the amount of breast milk that a woman will have. And in fact, there have been some analyses that if you take these effects into account and do an analysis, you are within the same ballpark of children at risk as you are with malaria itself. But again, it's this interesting balance between an environmental toxin that you hardly see the effects because they are population-based effects, and an infectious disease that you see the immediate effects on. And that's why we have to be very subtle in our approach to this and attempt to both eradicate malaria, which we have to demand. This is a disease of poverty. This is a disease that ought to be eradicated. We have the tools to do it. And at the same time, we ought to be moving away from the use of DDT and other persistent pesticides.
So now, have health professionals in malaria-stricken regions of Africa been calling for wider use of DDT? Is that part of the motivation here?
Oh, yes. There is a major debate going on in many of these areas between both the people that have been battling the malaria over a period of years as well as environmentalists, and there are people on both sides of the issues in every one of these countries. There's an active debate going on in Kenya right at the moment. There continues to be a debate in South Africa. It is one of our more, again, difficult public health estimates to make. We have to avoid the kind of mistakes that, let's say, were made in Bangladesh about 10 years ago, where we decided in order to combat infectious disease produced by drinking surface water, for drinking water, we dug deep wells, spent a lot of money on digging deep wells, and now we discover that these deep wells are heavily contaminated with arsenic. So we don't want one solution that produces another problem.
Now, you've mentioned some of the better ways, like the bed nets and dealing with local conditions, better ways of tackling malaria. How can we fight malaria in the real long term?
Right. We need a balanced approach, both immediately and long-term. For instance, you mentioned bed nets. Bed nets are excellent when people have a home to live in. But let's say we're combating malaria in certain areas of India where people are living on the streets. Obviously, bed nets are not the tool that we can use there. So again, a lot of this has to be extremely local. Long-term with malaria, as any of these countries that have eradicated it, relies upon economic development. Again, this is a disease of poverty. We have the tools to eradicate it. We just need the both national and international commitment, the organization of the communities to do so, and then the economic development long-term to avoid the return.
You mentioned Mexico and Vietnam. Would you say that's how they managed to tackle it?
Yes, without question. These are countries that decided they weren't going to use DDT anymore. They were going to use some other pesticides that may have some problems with them also, pyrethroids and others, but they were going to do so as part of an integrated pest management approach that mobilized communities for this development. By the way, you know, there is a self-interest issue here for us in the States. If, in fact, global warming continues to proceed as it has been, and, for instance, we are not able to get control of our releases of carbon dioxide, et cetera, we will be in a situation where we will see a resurgence of malaria and other tropical diseases of this sort in the areas in the United States. So these are lessons we have to learn both for ourselves and for the world.
If there are better and safer and longer-term alternatives, why is the WHO suddenly putting DDT on the agenda again? Was there anything to do with political or corporate changes that were pushing in that direction?
Well, I can't really speculate on that. There was a very excellent in-depth article in the New York Times that indicated that the change in approach of the Bush administration with respect to international funding may have something to do with it. It may have had something to do with the fact that this announcement and press conference was held in Washington with several members of the U.S. government and the Senate in attendance. But that's something WHO will have to answer, since there doesn't, from an environmental scientist point of view, we went, and I went, to look for what was the reanalysis. Where was the evidence that led them to shade this policy in one way or another? And there was no reanalysis done. So I really am at a loss for knowing what happened, what's the justification for this press release, and, you know, what's developing. We do know that about half of the WHO staff of the rollback malaria campaign have left because they're unhappy with the director and apparently this policy making by press release. So I'm really confused.
Would you say it's politically motivated?
It would appear to be so, but I don't have evidence, you know, to justify that one way or another. From an environmental scientist point of view, I'm confused because it doesn't look like there's new evidence. It's not clear what exactly this change in policy means since, as we said, DDT was never banned. It was always to be used appropriately. All we have to go on is this rather general press release that quotes the head of the rollback malaria program from WHO and a number of other WHO officials, as well as a U.S. senator and some others.
Well, thank you very much for talking with me this morning about this, Peter. It's been very interesting.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Peter Orris, Director of the Occupational Health Services Institute at the University of Illinois at Chicago. This is Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.